Okay, Revelation 18, we want to maybe not quite finish it out today, but come close to that in just a moment. We'll read verses 16 through 21. You may remember that back in Revelation 14, John talked about Babylon. And he said back in Revelation 14, I believe it's verse 8, Babylon has fallen. Well, now we've come back to resume the discussion of that, and we have some other evil powers. We have said at various times, we have basically, when you think about evil, the counterpart to the Godhead, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. And then the counterpart to that, of course, would be Satan, evil civil government, and false religion. Babylon is involved with a lot of things. False religion seems to be a big part of it. And we'll say a little bit more about that as we look at the text. But let's dig in, Revelation 18, 16 to 21. Saying, woe, woe, the great city. That would be Babylon. She that was arrayed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, and decked with gold and precious stone and pearl. For in 1 hour, so great riches is made desolate. And every shipmaster and every one that saileth any whither, and mariners and as many as gain their living by the sea stood afar off, and cried out as they looked upon the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like the great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city, wherein all that had the ships of the sea were made rich by reason of her costliness, for in 1 hour is she made desolate. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye saints, and ye apostles, and ye prophets, for God hath judged your judgment on her. And then 21 talks about a strong angel taking up a stone, as it were a great millstone, and casting it into the sea, saying, thus with a mighty fall shall Babylon, the great city, be cast down, and shall be found no more at all. 2 weeks ago, we went through some of the things that John associated with Babylon. There were about 30 different items. We talked about the slaves, and we talked about the gold, and all the finery that it had, the very best. Now, as we look at this, I think it may be helpful. If you go across the page, back to Revelation chapter 17, you begin to see some parallels. John, as he talks about this city in 16, let's get it before us. He says, woe, woe, the great city. What she have? She has 18:16. Okay. And what else do we find? All right, purple, scarlet, decked with gold, precious stone, pearl. A lot of things. Now, skip back just a little bit to 17:4. What do you find? There's this woman, what's she arrayed in? Purple, scarlet, decked with gold, precious stone, and pearls. Well, it sounds a lot like the same thing, doesn't it? And there's enough similarity to me where I think it's safe to say that the woman in Revelation 17:4 is the same character that we have being described as the great city in Revelation chapter 18. In fact, as you look at this reference to Babylon, you find it or her described in a lot of different ways. The woman, the city, and so forth. If you back up a little bit, Revelation 17:1. He says, there came one of the seven angels that had the seven bowls and spake with me, saying, come hither, and I'm going to show you the judgment on what? It's going to be the great harlot, the prostitute. So that's one more way to describe Babylon. We have in Scripture sometimes multiple descriptions for the same thing. We do it in life as well. And this seems to be what we have when we're dealing with Babylon, this false religious system. Now, there are several people who look at Babylon as some giant, some united system. And when people look at the book of Revelation, oftentimes they will say, well, this giant, this united system, it's all about ancient Rome. I think there's some truth in that, but the more I think about Babylon, the more it seems to me that there have been Babylons throughout time. That is, this anti-God spirit, the things involved with Babylon, as we go back and try to unfold it, we begin to see, I would refer to them maybe as some microcosms throughout time. We see this spirit to some degree, and then if we are correct in what we've suggested, it seems like it's really going to be magnified. It's really going to be a problem sometime before the Lord returns. But if you begin to think about time, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, can you see Babylon there? They appeared to have some kind of religion, and you've got immorality, a lot of the things that are associated with Babylon. You've got Tyre in the Old Testament. You've got Nineveh. And all of these, they seem to be, you know, microcosms, smaller examples of Babylon, the system that John is describing of. And Rome, it also would have been an example of Babylon, but I don't believe it was the ultimate fulfillment of it. And then we talked about from Revelation 17, verses 16 and 17, how Babylon would one day be destroyed. He talked there in 16, the ten horns, that is, civil government. John said he saw that. And the beast, these shall hate the harlot. Well, there's that reference to Babylon or this prostitute or the woman, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh, and shall burn her utterly with fire. Well, that's what we're reading about now here in Revelation chapter 18. In Revelation 18:16, John pronounces a woe on Babylon, and then he says the fall of this power was going to come how quickly, how fast? He says it's going to collapse in a single hour. Now that's a brief period of time. As you look ahead a little bit, Revelation 18 verse 10, he uses this same time period. And if something can collapse in an hour, what's it tell you about its power?
Very powerful.
All right, the one doing this destroying is very powerful. The thing collapsing, though, there's something more powerful going on. So it might be great as far as the power of Babylon, but if it can be brought down in an hour, and not literally, but a short period of time, then it's definitely something that we don't want to trust in. It's something that we don't want to put our hope in, and so forth. And then as you look at verse 17, you go just one verse more. What's it say? For in an hour, there's that idea again, the great riches are made desolate. Well, again, that sounds like that's not the kind of system that we want to trust in. Short period of time, the riches are gone. Can you imagine what it would be like if the world's stock markets one day all went to zero? I mean, if the U.S. market collapsed like that, back in the 80s, I remember that we had a bad crash and people were killing themselves because of that. But we didn't go to zero. But just imagine every world market, just how people would feel. Or you have another situation. Here's a person who's a millionaire, and he today is a millionaire. Tomorrow he wakes up, and how much does he have? Zero. Imagine what he would be feeling like. Well, that's the kind of thing that John is talking about as far as the impact of this. Yes. And again, you find people essentially millionaires one day and the next, they're looking for where the next meal is going to come from. Yes. So we have had, and I don't think that that's Babylon here, but as far as an example of how people would feel and the kinds of reactions that would take place, the world's not completely unfamiliar with this kind of thing. And those are good examples, so thank you. Babylon, we've spent some time on it. We dedicated a good part of one class to trying to understand it. To enhance our understanding today, I want to go to the book of Revelation and show you four primary reasons for its collapse. Now, if we can understand the reasons for Babylon's collapse, I think that's also going to kind of get our heads around the things involved with it. We've often summarized it as false religion, and that's a pretty good summary, but as I said, there does seem to be a little more with it. Let's have somebody go back to Revelation 18 and read verses 7 and 23. Who wants to take care of that for us in just a minute? Revelation 18, Brian, verses 7 and 23. And then we'll look at Revelation 19:20 and 20:10. 19:20 and 20:10. Who wants to? Steve. 19:20 and 20:10. Then Revelation 18:11 to 17. I'm going to summarize that. And then Revelation 17:5 and 6. We could read also from 18 and 19, but this will be enough. Revelation 17:5 and 6. Lois. Okay, let's start with Revelation 18, verses 7 and 23. Brian. Okay, able to deceive how many people? All the nations, verse 23. And then back there in verse 5, she said, I sit as a queen, reigns like royalty. So when we think about Babylon, whatever John is describing by this power, it is a way that's associated with pride. So you see there may be the idea of self-sufficiency. Maybe part of the thing is we don't need God. That would seem to be at odds with the idea that religion is involved, but sometimes we find a secular religion where people feel like, I'm my own God and I've come up with my own spirituality. So Babylon, in part, is going to be overthrown because of pride. And then let's also see what we have in 19:20 and 20:10.
And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast. and then that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. 20:10.
Uh-huh.
And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night, forever and ever.
And as you look at these references that Steve just read, you have the thing that we talked about before. Remember three members of Godhead? Three evil powers as well. You've got the devil. You've got the beast, that is evil civil authority. And now he talks about this third power, Babylon, the harlot, the woman. Or in Revelation 19:20 and 20:10, how is it described? It is also the false prophet. So you've got pride when it comes to Babylon. You've also got religion mixed in when it comes to Babylon. And then remember 2 weeks ago from Revelation 18, verses 11 through 17, we went through these 30 or so items. Babylon was interested in, well, let's just kind of go back and highlight the list a little bit. Interested in gold and silver, precious stone, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, fine wood, vessels of ivory, vessels made out of precious wood, brass, iron, marble, cinnamon, spice, incense, all those things. If you're living that kind of life, what kind of life do you have? You out there in the shack eating rice every day? All right. Pride, false religion, great luxury. And then let's look at the fourth thing that's going to be involved with Babylon's fall. Revelation 17, 5 and 6. And we'd also, as I said, find this in Revelation 18, 24 and 19, 2.
And upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly.
Okay. Babylon is also involved with what, according to John? The blood of the saints. Well, is that positive or is that negative? It's not positive. What's he describing? What have they done to God's people? Yeah, persecute them. Persecuted them, even to the point of murder. So when you look at Babylon, there is this great system. And that's why I say you find these things throughout human history. But also, if we think back at as far as you know what things were like in the time of Noah, that seems to be a pretty good picture of what was taking place then. And as we've suggested, seems to be kind of the state of things that what things would be like at the end of the world. But there is apparently this system that God says will arise at some point. And yet, evil civil government at the end of Revelation 17 will somehow turn on it. And then as we've seen in Revelation chapter 18, after they do that, after they destroy it, things are not going to go very well. In fact, if you look at Revelation 18, verses 15, 17, and 19, you begin to see some of the consequences that people begin to face after Babylon is gone. The merchants of these things, that is, they were involved with Babylon, they were made rich by her. They're going to stand afar off, and what are they going to be doing? Weeping. Great grief. Because Babylon was so lucrative. And we saw that from some of the things that I mentioned earlier as far as going through that list in about verses 11 through 15. And then you also have in 17, for in 1 hour, so great riches is made desolate. Every shipmaster, everyone that saileth any whither, and mariners, and as many as gain their living by the sea, they stood off and they cried out. They looked at the smoke of her burning, and again, it was traumatic for them. So much so that in verse 19, you have words like cried and weeping and mourning and saying, woe, woe, the great city, wherein all that had their ships in the sea were made rich by reason of her costliness, and yet it has all been brought to desolation. As John talks about these people involved with ships, this is another category of business people, and there are really about four different groups that are described here. You have some of the people, of course, that would have been involved in operating the ships. You have some people that would have worked on the ships just like they do today, handling cargo, those kinds of things. There would have been passengers. And then the other category would be people who built the ships. They were involved with the fishing or maybe doing some diving with things like pearls. Now, this was a good illustration for John. Because if you lived in the ancient world, could you move some things by land? Go back 2,000 years ago. Could you move some things by land? Sure. You know, get a caravan, get some camels, or get some donkeys or other beasts of burden. And that's going to work out okay. But is there going to be a better way to move things? I mean, if you are a major businessman, and you really, I mean, you want to be the Sam Walton of the ancient world, you're going to be able to do it by land?
By water.
All right, you're going to do it by ship. going to probably cost a little more to get the ships and get all the infrastructure in place. But my ships, just like today, you see the big barges going down. You can imagine, I mean, compare a barge, a filled barge, to a semi. There's no comparison. You can use a train. I don't know exactly which would be greater, but in that day and time, certainly to go by sea was one of the great things. One of the famous people in ancient times described the scene in Rome in this way. He said, so many merchant ships arrive here, conveying every kind of goods from every people every hour and every day, so that the city is like a factory common to the whole earth. The arrivals and departures of the ships never stop, so that one would express admiration for the harbor, but even the sea. So John would have been familiar with this, and he knows that this is a big part of Roman life. You've got all this sea traffic coming in, all these merchants. And yet, what does he describe? He says it all comes apart. It all collapses in describing the downfall of Babylon. Now, how will that ultimately be fulfilled? I do not know. But it is the picture, and that's why I used earlier the reference to, can you imagine the stock market going to zero? And Virginia gave an example back in 1929, or the person who wakes up having been a millionaire the previous days. I mean, again, I don't know that there's any way to go ahead and say, Rome certainly did experience this as far as its downfall, but there also seems to be something as far as the future as well. And it's going to be, John says in verse 19, a time of great grief. We have multiple passages in the Old Testament that talk about people sprinkling dust on their heads. Now, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, to me, that just sounds like a good way to get dirty. To rip the clothes. You got a nice dress, and who wants to just rip the dress? But in ancient times, especially in this part of the world, people were really emotional folks, and this was one of the ways that they expressed grief and mourning. But as you look at this mourning, 2 Corinthians 7:10 reminds us that mourning can fall into a couple of different categories. Remember, Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians 10 the sorrow that is of the world. What kind of sorrow was worldly sorrow? Yeah, somebody goes out and smacks somebody in the parking lot as far as one car hitting another today. Well, they're maybe sorry in the sense, now, my insurance is going to have to be involved, my premiums are going to go up. But they might not be sorry in what other sense?
Didn't like their car anyway.
Yeah, it could be that. Or, they're not really sorry that they did damage to a brother or sister. There's not that godly sorrow, but there is that worldly sorrow. When you look at what we have here in Revelation 18, the downfall of Babylon, is there that spiritual sorrow? Oh, hey, this evil power has been overthrown, and we're kind of in the godly category, or it's, hey, it's gone, and look at our money. It's been drained. Which kind of sorrow is it? They're grieving. They're upset because of worldly sorrow, and that does not speak very well of these folks. So on the one hand, you've got the downfall of Babylon, you've got people upset about that, but as you continue to read through the account that we looked at, verse 20, are there some people that have a different reaction? Yeah. He says in verse 20, what's that first word? Rejoice. There are some people that need to be happy about this. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye saints and ye apostles and ye prophets, for God hath judged your judgment on her. Not sure who is described by the word heaven. Maybe that refers to angels, but certainly human beings when they see this kind of thing. John describes them as being very, very pleased that this power, this way of life. And remember, one of the things that we talked about Babylon, we said that wealth is involved, false religion is involved, pride is involved. But what's that fourth element? Lois read it. The blood of the saints. Now, if you've got a power that's killing you, persecuting the church, what's going to be your attitude when it's gone? Thank God. Well, that's what we have here. We're grateful that this power is gone. Now, that's not going to, from what we see in the text, completely eliminate God's problems, but at least it's one big thing off of the back of God's people. And then you have some information at the end of verse 20 that it's really easy to miss. But he says in those final words, for God hath judged your judgment on her. The picture seems to be this. Had Babylon judged God's people? It did. It said, you deserve what? Death. You deserve persecution. John says, guess what? A time is going to come when the one that did the judging is going to be judged. And the judgment that the judge put on you, guess what? That judgment is now going to be inflicted on you. That is, the tables are going to be turned. Now, we've said repeatedly, I'm going to flip back to the book of Jeremiah for just a second, that John often goes back to the Old Testament. We have not run, in our time in Revelation, all the references. Otherwise, we'd be in this for about 10 years. But sometimes it seems important to go back to the Old Testament and actually pull out some of these passages, in part just to remind us that they are there. In Revelation, or Jeremiah 51, we have some information that John seems to use in Revelation 18. He says in 51:49, as Babylon has caused the slain of Israel to fall. Now this refers to the Babylon way back when, hundreds of years prior. As Babylon has caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the land. Well, that seems to be where John went back and drew this from. Only John used it to describe the kinds of things that we're talking about. And God will one day, as we saw back then in Revelation 17, 16 and 17, use evil civil government in some way to bring down this power of Babylon. And again, how that's going to be done, when that's going to be done, I don't know. But that does seem to be the promise that we have here. Anybody want to add anything or discuss anything over what we've said so far? The best I can offer with that is you have these people involved with Babylon. If the system falls apart, how close do you want to be to it?
Well, you don't want to be very close, but if you're right there in the middle of it, how do you stand afar off?
Yeah. There is this desire, I think, to separate. People would want to separate themselves from that. But people sometimes have that morbid curiosity where they still kind of want to watch. I just don't want to be affected by it. So there does seem to be some desire there to avoid being taken down. And I think that is that would be how I would look at that. That they, you know, want to see what's taking place, but they don't want to be sucked into it. As far as the downfall, even though they did have some involvement with it. So, Stan, I saw you next, and then Brian will take your thought.
Well, it seems to me like he's talking to those people who are faithful. There would be, even if they're physically right in the center of everything that's going on, there would be a psychological disconnect there. It would be like in their mental state, actually separating themselves, putting themselves far off from the conditions that Babylon here represents.
Okay, I think that's a worthwhile thought too, Brad.
In your example, if the stock market goes to zero, there are people who rely on that so much that people who would step in and try to intercept that, try to stop it from happening. These people, these merchants and everybody that are relying on Babylon and have their livelihood there, you'd think they jump in to try to help. But the fact that they're standing afar off, they realize the futility of trying.
Yeah.
There's no rescue, no relief for Babylon. It's going to be complete and total.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. And you can probably tie that back into evil civil government. We've mentioned before, civil government is a powerful, powerful force. And let's go back and read it again to kind of follow up on that thought. The ten horns, and we read this earlier, which thou sawest, and the beast, that is, you've got evil civil authority coming together. These shall do what? They're going to hate, absolutely despise Babylon, the harlot, the woman that we've talked about. And they shall make her desolate and naked. They're going to eat her flesh. They're going to burn her utterly with fire. So as you look at the enmity between evil civil government and how it decides to attack Babylon, how close do you want to be to that? I mean, you don't want to intervene because this power is being just pounded and pounded and pounded. And to go back to what we're talking about with Betty, you know, we're kind of interested in maybe seeing what happens, but this is just too much. The force that's being applied is just too deadly. So let's see if we can extricate ourselves from it as it goes down the tubes.
I think we've got an example even with Iraq. That government was an evil civil government there. The way Saddam handled the things and how much murder there was,
yeah,
and unrighteous. At the end of the war, their money went to nothing. Their money was one of the highest rated in the world. Went to nothing. If they wanted to buy a loaf of bread, they had to take a wheelbarrow full of money to go and buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
So that's how it went down to nothing. It's a good example, I think.
Yeah, we've seen pure currency devalued at various times in human history. Germany was another example. You can remember the images of people, literally, it's the wheelbarrow, and you've just got stacks and stacks and stacks of bill. So, you know, Russia has gone through that as well. When I was there, they were changing money at one time. And, you know, $2,000 for a bus ride. You know, here it's a quarter. But because their currency had been so devalued, I mean, things really got out of control, so they had to do a currency reset, basically, and say, we're going to print some new money, the old is no longer good, and revalue the currency. So it does happen. But here John describes something that is just magnified beyond that many, many times. So, okay, some good comments. All right, verse 21. Moving down to this section, John here talks about a strong angel. Now that to me is an interesting description. We've already seen it twice. It was used back in Revelation 5:2, also in Revelation chapter 10, verse 1. And here John says this strong angel does something. What's he do? Goes out and picks up a stone, a millstone. Now there were a couple kinds of millstones in the first century. There were the small ones that women would use to grind, and then there were the bigger ones that were used by donkeys. And he gets this millstone, and where does he take it? All right, he takes it to a place where he can throw it in the sea. And then the third point is, what's said about finding this millstone? Not going to be able to find it again. Now here's another place where if you were looking at your cross references, you'd find that he goes back to the Old Testament, Jeremiah 51. And this is kind of an interesting passage, so I'm going to read it, just about four verses. Jeremiah 51, verses 60 through 64. That'll take us to the end of the chapter. And Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon. Well, that's interesting. Again, not a reference to the Babylon that we're talking about, but the Babylon of his day and time. All the evil that should come upon Babylon. But we're still talking about evil or punishment coming upon the Babylon described by John, right? Revelation 18? We are. Even all the words that are written concerning Babylon. And Jeremiah said unto Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon, then see that thou read all these words. And say, O Jehovah, thou hast spoken concerning this place to cut it off. Well, again, that's kind of what we're talking about in Revelation 18, that none shall dwell therein, neither man nor beast, but it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone. Well, that's what we're talking about in Revelation 18. Bind a stone to it, and cast it where? All right, go to some water, cast it in the Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise again because of the evil that I would bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. So again, you can see where John was able to draw this image from, had some application for Babylon way back when, also for what we're dealing with here. As you think about a millstone, if it was turned by a donkey, imagine a stone that may have been about 5 feet in diameter, and stone like that would have maybe weighed at least several hundred pounds, maybe several thousands of pounds, and this giant rock is taken out into the sea and it's dropped. Well, you know, how long is it going to take for that rock to sink? Going to float around for a while? I mean, it's just going to plop to the bottom. And I mean, now we've got submarines and some other things, but don't try to read that into the text. You know, for John, if you take this big rock out and you drop it into the sea, ever going to be seen again? I mean, it's a way of saying it's gone, it's buried, it's done, it's over with. Well, if you use this analogy to say, hey, this is going to be what's going to happen to Babylon, what are you saying? Babylon is going to be wiped out. It's going to be toast. Well, isn't that exactly what we saw in Revelation 17, 16 and 17? Remember, you've got evil civil authority, and it decides to do what to the beast? To burn it, to attack it, to destroy it, to get rid of it. So John keeps coming back to this point and making it in a lot of different ways. And as I said, this, in my mind, the ultimate fulfillment of it will take place somehow before the Lord returns at the end of time. Now, let me put an asterisk on that. Someone will say, well, now, if you think that this has to occur before Jesus returns again, then you would have to say that the Lord could not return today. There's got to be this kind of event, and that would allow us to predict the end of time. Let me show you something. Let's turn to 2 Thessalonians 2. Look at the first three verses. 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 1 through 3. Somebody want to take care of that for us? You're there, or maybe about there. All right, Lois.
Say 2 Thessalonians 2,
the first three verses.
Now we request you, brethren, with regard to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, that you may not be quickly shaken from your composure or be disturbed either by a spirit or a message or a letter as if from us, to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction.
Okay. I'd like you to think carefully with me through the following point. If we had been among the Thessalonians, Paul showed up, and we stopped him at the back door and we said, hey, Paul, could Jesus come today? What would he have said based on what Lois just read? Paul, can Jesus come today? Yes or no?
Can he come? Yeah.
Could he? Let's read it again, Lois.
All three verses?
All three. Well, two.
That's okay.
Okay, two and three are probably enough.
That you may not be quickly shaken from your composure or be disturbed either by a spirit or a message or a letter as if from us, to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come.
Okay, now I'm going to stop you for just a second. For it will not come. What does the it refer to? All right, or we would refer to it as maybe the second coming, right? For it will not come. What's the text say after that?
Unless the apostasy comes first.
All right. Unless, or maybe we'll use the word till. It will not come till the apostasy occurs. Well, had that apostasy occurred?
No.
Not. Obviously not. So, let me go back and ask my question again. If we were able to catch Paul at the back door about 2,000 years ago and say, Paul, can Jesus come today? What would the answer have been? No, he can't come. Why? Because there has to be an apostasy first. So he was able to say, you know, we know, and again, don't go too far with this or go wild with this, but I use that passage to simply say, here is at least one example of where the Bible says before the Lord could or would return, something had to happen. And my view of Revelation, as we're talking about the destruction of Babylon, if this is something that's going to occur at the end of time, that also has to occur, just like 2 Thessalonians 2. So you may have some additional comments on that or may want to think about that, but I think that is a helpful cross-reference in trying to think through these kinds of things. And also mention that because someone might say, well, you know, as we're going through this, you're giving some things that might predict the end of time. You're trying to predict the end of time, or at least you're trying to predict the season. No, I'm not. But simply to do what Paul did in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, to say, here is an event, and if it is future, then it will be one of the things that does need to occur before Jesus comes back. I would also put a second asterisk here, that instead of trying to focus, well, are we in that season, or is that season soon, or will that season come within our lifetime, that's not really our job. What's our job? Be prepared, be faithful, and we've got some indications as far as things may not be all that pleasant for God's people throughout the Christian era, especially towards the end of time, But we don't know when the end is going to come, Matthew 24:36, and our job is to be faithful regardless of what happens. Anything that you want to add or ask on that point? Okay. Stan?
When it says that vessel of water shall break, that will be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. And you've been talking about the fact that Babylon actually pops up on a cyclic basis, actually. I mean, there's been, over time and again, this has occurred. Well, could this be considered or thought of as collectively?
Maybe.
The whole concept, the whole idea, everything that has made up each of these quote-unquote Babylons, all wrapped together in a package, at this point, will be gone.
It may be, and that's why I said earlier, how it is fulfilled exactly, I do not know. I don't know that anybody does. And that, I think, helps tie into the fact that Jesus said, we don't know when the end is going to be. But there does, when you look at, Glenda?
When you refer to 2 Thessalonians, maybe Paul is referring back, though, to the destruction of Jerusalem there? Instead of the end of times in Revelation?
Are we talking about the man of sin?
Well, depends, because there's references to Daniel.
Oh, okay. Well, where are you at in 2 Thessalonians?
Verses 2 and 3.
Okay.
And then you're talking about man of perdition.
Right. Okay. I use those verses to make the point that I wanted to make, which was that very basic point. That is, Paul said, before the Lord returns, this has to occur. It hasn't yet occurred, so it's still something in the future. And, you know, the day of the Lord is still a ways out. Now, if you move a little more deeply into the text, which is what you're referring to, as far as he talks about the falling away, the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, verse 4, he that opposes and exalts himself against all that's called God or that is worshipped, he sits in the temple of God, setting himself forth as God. Here is another subject that people have interpreted in a lot of different ways. Some people would try to refer to this as the end of time. They would say that this is the Antichrist and he's going to be some kind of worldwide dictator and so forth. We looked at that several years ago. My preferred view, as far as at least a fulfillment that would have been especially meaningful to these people, would be that it does have a reference to the destruction of Jerusalem. There may be a broader reference as well to maybe some of the things that we're talking about as far as the end of time, but I do think that you can make a really good case for at least a good part of that being fulfilled there when Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD. Had what?
10 hills.
Is it seven? I'm thinking it was 7 hills, not 10.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look at the geography on that. But
is it the same amount as Rome?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in Jeremiah, it's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem.
Okay. We're back in Jeremiah.
I'm just flopping back and forth here.
Okay.
In Revelation, it's talking about the destruction of the Roman Empire, correct?
Okay. Let's back up a little bit. Jeremiah has a lot of things to say about Judah, the southern kingdom of Israel, how Babylon was going to be involved in oppressing it, punishing it because of its sins. And then John uses that information sometimes in the book of Revelation to talk about powers that oppose God's people. Okay, all right. Well, one of those powers was certainly Rome. Now, it's not been the only power, but for those in John's day and time, it would have been the power that was on their mind because that was the culture in which they lived.
I'm talking about teaching people that saying that the Roman Catholic Church is going to, Rome will never rule again. So
right. And we talked about this a little bit back in about Revelation 11, I believe. Catholicism has also done great damage to God's people. Some of the things that you see involved with Babylon, the pride, the money, the persecution, the four things that we talked about, Catholicism has had those as well. But again, and that's why I say you have some microcosms of what John talks about, and that would be one. But it's certainly not the only one. Rome would be another, and other nations throughout time have demonstrated many of those same qualities. Okay, 5 minutes left, and let's see. We've got this. Right, you know, as we think about Babylon, especially, you know, the material and the pride and all that stuff, it reminds me, this system reminds me a little bit of Jesus' temptation. Remember Luke 4, verses 5 and 6 would be one example of this. What did Satan say to Jesus? Fall down, worship me, and what am I going to give you? All these kingdoms. Well, you know, that wasn't persecution necessarily, but you begin to think about the material aspect of that we've talked about with Babylon. You begin to think the pride. You're going to be able to rule all over all these things. And then you think about the covetousness of all involved with that as well. You're going to have all this stuff. And when you begin to think about Babylon, the three or four things that we associated with it, it just is really a good description. If you can think about a religion, makes people feel good, and it's a religion that involves you, you know, with money, covetousness, you think that's going to be attractive to folks? Feel good, pride, people who don't agree with you, you go ahead and persecute them, and you can just pursue luxury. To me, that sounds, life on earth is what it's all about. To me, that sounds like that's a way that's going to be very, very attractive to people. We've already seen that, haven't we? I mean, that is the American way, isn't it? So, as John talks about this system, we see some of the maybe precursors to it, if you will, in this life. All right, then let's pick up 22 and 23. He says, "And the voice of harpers and minstrels and flute players and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee. And no craftsman or whatsoever craft shall be found any more at all in thee. And the voice of a mill shall be heard no more at all in thee. And the light of a lamp shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee." Verses are a little difficult in one respect, but in another respect they're pretty easy. John's still describing the downfall of Babylon. He said it's going to be complete. There's going to be this total devastation. And now he gives some illustrations of it. Maybe the illustrations are in the material realm. Maybe they're in the spiritual realm. Maybe there's a combination. It's a little difficult. But when you think about harpers and flute players, musicians, concerts, what's that bring to mind? What area of life? All right, happiness, entertainment, the fun things. And then you begin to look at the other descriptions. He talks about the voice of the mill. Well, not literally. A mill wouldn't say anything. But when you say the voice of the mill, what are you describing? Work. All right, work. The person who's out there involved in that kind of activity. And he says, no craftsman of whatsoever craft. Well, the people, ladies often would go out and grind flour to bread and so forth. Jeremiah, once again, if you were to go back to Jeremiah 25:10, you'd see that John apparently pulls this information from the 25th and 10th verse of that chapter. And they seem to be one more reminder that when Babylon falls, a lot of things are going to fail with it. Maybe here as far as people not being able to mill, that would tie in with what we read about the ships. You know, the people that were involved with transportation, they have lost that money. They have lost that ability to go ahead and create income and so forth. And there may also be a spiritual application here. We've described Babylon as false religion, at least in part. And what have we said about false religion? Will it give people at least a little light, at least a little spiritual insight? Sure. I mean, most religions would say it's wrong to steal, wrong to kill people. You know, it's wrong to do these things that would fall into the category of basic morality. But if you destroy Babylon, this system which at least has some religion in it, then what kind of state do you get to? The kind of state that we discussed 2 weeks ago. You squeeze out the light, even though there's not much of it, but you douse the light. And in the darkness, what do you have when it comes to morality? Every man for himself. Every man for himself. You do what pleases you most. And you can then, I think, begin to go back and see why. Remember the kings that had allied with Babylon? When Babylon falls, are they rejoicing? I mean, they decided, let's come together and destroy it. Got a good idea. But after it falls, what happens? The kings of the earth, they're mourning. Anarchy. Yeah, because it's anarchy. And again, how all that unfolds, I mean, we see some of that, even in our country right now. You know, you do what you want, and, you know, religion is squished a little bit here and there. But this seems to describe something of are on a much broader scale.